Listen to the best of the church's music for the Advent season at LutheranPublicRadio.org. Sacred music for the Advent season, LutheranPublicRadio.org.
You know, we're doing really well with the evangelicals. And by the way, and again, I do like Ted Cruz, but not a lot of evangelicals come out of Cuba.
Well, listen, certainly in the media, there has been no shortage of criticism for Donald Trump. And I do not believe the world needs my voice added to that chorus of critics.
I'm going to support the Republican nominee, and I believe the Republican nominee is going to be someone that can win the general election. And I don't believe Donald can.
The voices of Republican presidential frontrunners Donald Trump, Senators Ted Cruz and Marco Rubio. Trump being Trump, Ted Cruz being gracious, and Marco Rubio being realistic. Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in live on this Monday afternoon, the 14th of December. We're going to be talking about the 2016 presidential race and Tuesday's GOP debate in Las Vegas, I believe, the big city and a big venue. Mark Hemingway, senior writer for the Weekly Standard, will be our guest for the first few minutes of this hour. A little bit later, we'll be teaching a Sunday school lesson today, the birth of John the Baptist in Luke chapter 1. Pastor Tom Baker of Law and Gospel will be our guest. You can join us with questions or comments over the next hour, 1-877-623-6943, 877-623-MYIE. Send us an email, talkback@issuesetc.org, a tweet at issuesetc. The Issues Etc. comment line always open, ready for your questions, comments, show suggestions, 618-223-8382. Joining us to talk about the 2016 presidential race and Tuesday's GOP debate, Mark Hemingway, a regular guest and senior writer for the Weekly Standard. Mark, welcome back to Issues Etc.
Hey, I'm glad to be back.
Many viewed Trump as a juggernaut going into someplace like Iowa. How do you think Ted Cruz has managed to pull ahead of him there?
Well, I think it's two things. I mean, one is simply that I think there's finally a bit of Trump fatigue setting in the electorate in general, although Trump's still doing very well in the polls. The people who live in Iowa, you know, sort of like relish their status as being able to sort of shape the debate. I think the voters are think a little differently than the average Republican voter out in, you know, the hinterland somewhere. So I think that they are choosing, you know, to reevaluate things a little bit, particularly a lot of the attendant bad press Trump has been getting. And I think the other thing is Cruz has just run an impeccable campaign in a lot of ways. He's sort of flown under the radar for a guy that's been very brash and gotten a lot of negative publicity in the Senate. But at the same time, he's been working very hard on the ground. He's got a very slick, sophisticated campaign operation. And, you know, he's gotten to be a much better campaigner than he used to be, and he's out there aggressively in Iowa. I actually, believe it or not, he's on my flight with a 2 weeks ago, and he just got back from 3 days in Iowa, and he's just hustling, you know, going door to door in Iowa and getting the votes out.
If he is able to carry Iowa in terms of the caucuses there, will that begin to spell the beginning of the end for Donald Trump?
Yeah, if Cruz beats Trump in Iowa, I think that the establishment Republicans who aren't exactly the biggest fans of Ted Cruz either would rejoice, just because it would show that Trump is beatable. And part of it's really bizarre what's happened with Trump as a phenomenon. I mean, he's been winning because he's been winning, you know, since the beginning of his campaign. He's leading in the polls because he constantly reminds people he's leading in the polls. It's like this weird tautological campaign. I mean, Trump doesn't really talk about issues that much, you know, other than, you know, a few hot button issues like immigration he likes to push in the abstract without having a lot of detailed or sensible plans laid out. So it's just a very sort of bizarre thing. And so what you really need is something to finally and definitively puncture this inevitability narrative for Trump. And Cruz is very well positioned to do that. The latest Des Moines Register poll had Cruz up by something like 11 points over Trump, which was just, you know, we haven't seen anything like that at all in any of these major polls in any of the early primary states. So Trump's been lashing out at Cruz in the last 24 hours or since the poll came out. And, it, you know, it's obvious that suddenly Trump is worried about what Cruz is doing.
Who are Donald Trump's supporters? Has anyone figured that out yet?
That is a really good question. You know, a lot of people have been trying to, you know, Frank Luntz just did this big focus group recently and trying to get to the bottom of that. And, you know, I don't really know. I mean, there it's a really odd mix of things. You know, his support skews very old. But other than that, it's sort of all over the map. There was a poll a couple months back that showed that the overwhelming second choice for president among Trump voters was Mitt Romney, who's not even running. And what that suggests to me is that, and you can't underestimate this, is that name recognition alone is a huge, huge thing for Trump, especially in a very sort of fractured field, as we're seeing among so many Republican nominees. So I suspect that there's a lot of people who are just either completely disaffected politically, like that Trump is out there just stirring things up and is not your typical candidate, and have sort of glommed onto him and what he means spirit rather than thinking too specifically about, you know, any sort of policies or how Trump would go about, you know, doing the job as president. And to be honest, I mean, I suspect that he's reeling in a lot of what I wouldn't say liberal Republicans, but certainly like Reagan Democrat types, you know, blue collar workers in the Midwest and things like that, you know, are sort of excited by the guy. But it's not, I don't think you can say it's the conservative base is out for Trump for sure.
One other question on Trump, and then we'll talk about some of the other fellas here. He boasts that he has not had to spend much money on television in particular. That's the real expense here. But also really on the, kind of the ground game. You mentioned before Ted Cruz's ground game in Iowa. That means he's got a lot of money to spend, but sooner or later you do have to spend it. What about the lack of a ground game kind of just running nationally at this point via the press's obsession with his image?
Okay. Well, there are two things here. One is, yes, Trump has not had to spend a lot of money on the conventional things that you think of in terms of presidential campaigns. I can't remember the exact figure. I think it was $217,000 Trump spent on advertising in like the third quarter, which is just an unbelievable figure. I mean, it's so unbelievably low. You can scarcely believe that this guy's running a major presidential campaign, let alone leading it for most of the time, spending that little on advertising because the media is so obsessed with him. And it really says something and very few good things about the media that they would give that much free airtime to, you know, any presidential candidate. I mean, I don't care if they're, you know, Abraham Lincoln. I mean, that's just an unbelievable dereliction of duty by the media to do their job fairly. That's the case. Now, the second half of that question is that even though Cruz has a really good campaign operation and that attributes a lot of success, it would be a big mistake to underestimate that Donald Trump is, you know, running some seat of the pants campaign. You know, he's a guy that's run major corporations all of a sudden. He's got a big organization around him. They are throwing money around in Iowa. In fact, Trump has hired some of the best operatives in Iowa to run his campaign there, and it's a real thing. You know, people aren't. It's weird because Trump is this outside personality. People aren't running the typical process stories about campaigns where they talk about who the campaign advisors are and all this inside baseball, you know, that they think is important. Like Trump has gotten very little of that kind of coverage, whereas, you know, more conventional candidates like Cruz and Rubio have gotten all sorts of, you know, coverage about who's running their campaign. But the reality is Trump's got a lot of people on the ground in Iowa that know what they're doing, and sort of the nightmare scenario is very real, which is the flip side of what I was talking about, Cruz puncturing Trump's inevitability. Well, what happens here if going into Iowa, Trump is, you know, 5 to 10 points down in first place and he overperforms and wins Iowa? Like at that point, it's just Katie bar the door. You know, the inevitability mean goes, you know, on steroids you know, you can almost imagine that Trump just, you know, exploding from there and picking up support and that might be maybe the most likely scenario for a Trump nomination. Now, I don't think it's going to happen, but that's the most likely scenario.
How do you explain the media's fascination with Trump?
That's a really good question. I think it's two things. Is that Trump genuinely brings the ratings. I mean, again, I mentioned he's got, you know, higher name recognition than anyone else in the field. You know, Americans have known this guy. He's been a part of their lives as this, you know, celebrity for, you know, going on four decades now. So it's real easy to just talk about Trump, and everybody knows who he is, and that's one way to get people to tune in. The other thing, though, is that I think that the media loves Trump because they don't want to admit it, but highlighting Trump and his sort of populist nativist agenda sort of feeds a lot of liberal stereotypes about what's wrong with conservatives, or I should say, it's unfair to portray Trump that way, because I actually think Trump's actual positions are more nuanced, and I actually think that Trump has done us all a service by forcing us to talk about immigration, which, for instance, which is an issue that, you know, the establishment in Washington D.C. really should have been talking about for a long time. But it's maybe even unfair to Trump, but the media can take what he's doing and flip it around to make it look like Trump represents all of these bad characteristics about Republicans, and they sort of relish that opportunity because, let's face it, the media isn't inclined to give favorable coverage to Republicans.
Is it fair to say that he's, in some ways, the candidate that the media would invent if they could invent one for their own purposes?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's exactly right. I mean, there is a bit of, they kind of love the whole Elmer Gantry vibe of Trump. But the other thing, though, is let's give Trump some credit. I mean, this guy is a genius communicator. I don't know if his particular, communication genius is good for solving problems, but he sure is good at getting people to listen to him and respond to him, even when it's not even necessarily productive. It's impossible to ignore Trump, or so it seems, but that's just the way it is.
Has this, for the GOP, become a three-person race right now, Mark?
I think it is. I mean, Carson has really exploded. You want to talk about the perception that they didn't actually have a campaign, and it was very true of Carson. It was amazing how popular Ben Carson was when he had absolutely no campaign operation that was in any way serious. Like when all these big events and controversies happened around his campaign in the last month, like the press literally didn't even know like who to talk to in his campaign to get a statement, because that's how ramshackle his campaign was. So with Carson out of the picture, I mean, it really is looking like, Trump, Cruz, Rubio. But having said all that, Chris Christie is recently got endorsed by one of the biggest papers in New Hampshire, and I think he's poised for a comeback, although he's not there yet, and it's still an outside chance. But I wouldn't rule out Chris Christie at this point.
We'll take a break, and when we come back, Mark Hemingway will be with us for a few more minutes. We're talking about the 2016 presidential race and Tuesday's GOP debate. We'll get to that on the other side of the break as well, and talk a little bit about the Democratic side. Mark Hemingway is a regular guest and senior writer for the Weekly Standard. We'll be right back.
LCMS Disaster Response provides guidance and assistance to congregations who seek to proclaim the gospel and show mercy in the wake of disasters. We can bring capacity to your congregation through on-site assessment, volunteer training and congregation preparedness, and through grants direct to your congregation. For more information, follow us on Facebook, keyword LCMS Disaster Response, or visit our website at lcms.org/disaster. That's lcms.org/disaster.
Listen to the best of the church's music for the Advent season at LutheranPublicRadio.org. Sacred music for the Advent season, LutheranPublicRadio.org.
Your comprehensive source for information, teaching, and truth. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Do you dread going to work out? Performance Fitness in Edwardsville offers a fun, supportive, tight-knit community and environment. Visit them on the web at performancefitness618.com or call 618-692-5063. Performance Fitness is the facility in the St. Louis Metro East where the focus is on member results, not membership numbers. 618-692-5063 or performancefitness618.com. Performance Fitness of Edwardsville.
At Concordia Evangelical Lutheran Church of Wilmington, Delaware, our mission is to serve our community by sharing Christian hope. We've been doing this since 1938 and joyfully continue to do so in the 21st century. If you're ever in the city that DuPont Chemical Corporation calls home, or is known by some as the credit card capital of the world, we hope you visit to receive Jesus through His Word and Sacrament. Otherwise, check us out on the web at ConcordiaWilmington.com.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Mark Hemingway is our guest from the Weekly Standard. We're talking about the 2016 presidential race and Tuesday's GOP debate. All right, Mark, let's talk about the debates. It's going to be in Las Vegas. It's another one of these big things. CNN is hosting it. What do the top three, Trump, Cruz, Rubio, have to do? And what do the people who are hoping to still, you know, rise up from the lower levels, the you mentioned before, Chris Christie, the Christies have to do at this debate?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think that Trump, for once, has to have a genuine standout debate performance, because there's going to be a lot of questions with him plummeting with the Des Moines Register poll. I mean, he's got to prove that he belongs on this stage with these people for a reason. And the last couple of debates, to be honest, Trump has just been coasting. You know, there are these, you know, he gets a lot of talk time, but there are these like 20, 30 minute holes in the debate where he doesn't even talk because they're talking about policy, and that's not something that Trump knows a lot about or seems terribly interested in. And at the same time, Cruz has really benefited because he was a national debating champion in college. He's incredibly comfortable in that kind of format. And plus, in all the previous debates, he wasn't the front runner, or he wasn't one of the most talked about candidates. So he had these like no pressure situations where he could walk in and take one of his biggest talents, just put it out there and let it shine. Now there's a little more pressure on Cruz to perform and prove that, you know, he is the presumptive, you know, likely nominee. So he can't quite take it for granted, but, you know, again, it's a very comfortable format. At the same time, Marco Rubio is just a natural. I mean, he's excelled in these debates. I mean, that one moment in the debate where Jeb Bush took him on about his voting record in the Senate, and Rubio just destroyed him. That was like watching the Jeb Bush candidacy, you know, fall apart in real time. So, I'm not worried about Rubio having a bad performance, but at the same time, you know, he's well positioned. Rubio seems to be a lot of people's second choice, but he's got to, again, do something to, you know, make himself maybe stand out a little more than he already has in this format. And then finally, you know, I mentioned the dark horse here is Chris Christie, who is doing very well, in part because he's had a couple of very good debate performances as of late, both at the undercard debate and then on the main stage as well, and made people stand up and take notice. So if Christie could, say, mix it up with, you know, Trump or Cruz or Rubio, one of the guys at the top, and come out of a big exchange looking like a victor in the debate, then I think a lot of people would take a second look at him. But he's got to do something to, like, really pop. But he has that ability, so we'll see.
There has been at least one debate where the candidates who were there expressed extreme disappointment to the almost the point of disgust at the questions that were leveled at them. And I'm wondering if you think that in this case, kind of coming back to the media angle here, do you think that the media has learned its lesson on how it's going to structure and the kind of questions it's going to ask at a GOP debate?
Yeah, I mean, I think they have. So that MSNBC debate where things fell apart, there were sort of two things that were wrong with it. One was that a lot of the questions, I think, unbeknownst to the moderators, had these like real presumptions built into them, and that sort of annoyed the candidates. And then the second thing was they were these weren't questions designed to get answers so much as they were transparently trying to get the candidates to fight with each other on stage, you know, and that's fine. You want the candidates to mix it up, but you don't want to like look like you're deliberately causing trouble. And that's what MSNBC ended up looking like. The first CNN debate that they had that was moderated by Anderson Cooper wasn't, you know, the worst thing. It started out actually even strong, but by the end it seemed it's sort of milk with toast. I don't think that CNN will completely screw this up, but they have enough journalists at CNN that are either, I think, impartial enough, like Jake Tapper, or intelligent enough that they can they know enough to answer to ask good questions. And I think we've been through so many debates at this point in time that they should have some sense of what will work with these candidates and what won't. But I can tell you, I know somebody who works at Fox who's been organizing Fox's debates and involved in that. And these things are a nightmare to put on from a journalist perspective. I'm deeply sympathetic to the networks on that level, dealing with all the individual demands of the candidates and making everybody happy and still coming off like you were trying to be fair is not an easy task.
Is there a risk at one of the candidates during the GOP debate in Las Vegas, is there a risk in going after Donald Trump?
Well, even though it's a fractured base, Trump still has the largest chunk of support in a lot of polls. And then again, as we pointed out, a lot of Trump's support is kind of amorphous. These are people that are disaffected. You don't know where they land in the political spectrum, but you know there's a good chance they'll be voting in a Republican primary. So don't want to, you know, come off looking like you're, you know, just attacking Trump for the sake of attacking Trump. One of the interesting things about Cruz's rise to the top is that he has been very diplomatic to the point of, you know, almost even accommodating of Trump and Trump supporters. And I think that that part of the reason for his success is because he has peeled off a lot of Trump support that way, because people feel like they can shift their allegiance to Cruz because he's not some establishment conservative or part of some beltway elite that is disdainful toward, you know, Trump or disdainful to the idea that we need to do something new to shake up politics, which is what Trump is bringing to the table. And so much of the Trump coverage and so much of the attacks on Trump have just been, this guy is awful, we got to get rid of him, you know, instead of saying things like, moderate things like, well, I don't like what Trump is doing in a lot of ways, and I don't like this idea that we need to ban Muslims, but he's right that we have an immigration problem, the immigration system that's broken, and we need to address these immigration problems. Like, there's been very little tempered criticism of Donald. So there's definitely a risk, I think, in going after him if you're one of the other candidates, because you're looking to peel off some of that support.
With respect to the Democratic side, does all the attention that's going to the GOP side, for all the various reasons we've talked about here, does it help or hinder Hillary Clinton or Bernie Sanders?
Well, it definitely helps Hillary Clinton. I mean, she's a presumptive nominee this point in time, despite the initial Sanders enthusiasm. Sanders has just completely declined to do any sort of substantive attacks on Hillary and make it a race, and the media's just kind of tuned out with Hillary's presumptive nominee. Now, that actually hurts. It helps Hillary seal the nomination, because there was a time a few months ago that it didn't look like necessarily a given, even if it was still likely. Now that it's a given, I think that it helps her get the nomination, but it may hurt her a little in the long run, because she hasn't exactly been vetted with all kinds of attacks in the primary. A lot of the issues with Hillary Clinton and the Clinton Foundation, I mean, it's just absolutely astounding stuff that, you know, has sort of just been like played at in the media, is going to come up with a vengeance once you get into the main campaign. And I don't think Hillary has a lot of practice in parrying those criticisms. And she's not a good candidate to begin with. I mean, people, you know, seem to have forgotten 2008, where she was, you know, walked all over by a junior senator from Illinois who had none of the advantages or financial support that she had. And he just destroyed her because she's such a terrible candidate. So, you know, at the same time, you know, I don't know whether or not a Cruz or a Trump or somebody that is a polarizing figure will be able to easily dispatch Hillary Clinton. But, you know, it's not doing her any favors that there's been so little talk about the Democratic candidates.
So what does she have to do between now and the beginning of the primary season to consolidate? I mean, everyone talks about the inevitability here and pretty much running unopposed when it comes to Bernie Sanders. But what does she have to do going into the primaries in order to plan for, make ready for the general?
Well, I think she's got to avoid this trap that one of the dangers about Bernie Sanders she's tripped her up on one very significant issue, and I'll get to that in a second, is that Bernie Sanders and the core of the Democratic base that, you know, that are very influential in Democratic primaries are way left of center. I mean, and I would argue even further left of center this day and age than, you know, the quote-unquote conservative Republicans are. So she's got to get through the Democratic primary without committing to being super liberal and all these other things that are going to turn off people in swing states. On particular issues. Now, there's one issue in particular she's gotten kind of tripped up on, which is guns, because Bernie Sanders is from Vermont, and even though Bernie Sanders is a self-declared socialist, Bernie Sanders and Howard Dean, the governor of Vermont, ran in 2004. All of the Vermont Democrats are super liberal on every issue except Vermont, the rural state, and they've all been very, very pro-gun, you know, gotten good ratings from NRA and the whole nine yards. So Hillary thought that that was one issue where she could credibly get some momentum by moving to the left of Bernie Sanders, and came out really strong on gun control prior to some of the, you know, in the wake of some of these recent mass shooting incidents. And that has not worked out the way she thought. I mean, I think a lot of liberals thought there'd be big momentum on gun control issues after this stuff, and there hasn't been. You know, recent New York Times poll over the weekend, the New York Times buried this in the 24th paragraph of a 25-paragraph story that, oh, by the way, for the first time in 20 years, the New York Times poll shows that a majority of Americans is against an assault weapons ban. And if anything, gun support is increasing. And for Hillary Clinton to have come out on this issue so strong as she has, and then to have to go into a general election and try and get people in places like, you know, Colorado, New Hampshire, you know, New Mexico, all of these rural swing states where, you know, even, you know, a huge percentage of the Democratic households are gun enthusiasts on board with that, is going to be tricky for her, because this is one issue, you know, the one issue other than immigration. Take it from me, if somebody who's run a couple of letters to the editor's pages, a couple of different daily newspapers. You write about guns, you write about immigration, you're going to get letters. I mean, those two issues are just motivating like no other. Trump has figured it out for immigration, and Hillary Clinton hasn't quite figured that out with guns.
Well, I guess that raises one more question, and that is, what would be the top issue in the general, whoever faces who, what will it be?
That is a really good question, and, you know, it's impossible to say with the way politics move anymore. I mean, I'm not that old, and I remember there was downtime in politics, and now it just seems like there's one issue to the next. But having said that, obviously national security has reemerged in a huge way in the last, you know, year or two. I mean, just a couple of years ago, we were talking about how we're going through a libertarian moment and how the next Republican candidate probably would be, you know, much more in sort of a Rand Paul non-interventionist mode. And, you know, yet here we are with ISIS on the march and terrorist attacks at home and, you know, the Middle East just an absolute disaster. And I think a lot of people are genuinely scared. So whoever the Republican nominee is going to be and whoever the Democratic nominee is going to have a very cohesive plan and a very sort of, you know, well thought out strategy that's going to appeal to people, that's going to tell them, I'm going to keep you safe. So I think that's a likely issue that's going to dominate the presidential campaign.
Mark Hemingway, senior writer for the Weekly Standard. You can read his columns at our website, issuesetc.org. Click Listen on Demand. Mark, thank you very much.
Thank you.
When we come back, we're going to be teaching a Sunday school lesson, Mary visiting Elizabeth in Luke chapter 1. Pastor Tom Baker of Long Gospel will be our guest. Stay tuned.
I I think every man, every Christian should consider, at least, the possibility of God calling him into the holy ministry.
Issues Etc. regular guest, Dr. Carl Fekencher of Concordia Theological Seminary, Fort Wayne, Indiana.
Because that's the way that God has designed for faith in Christ Jesus to be spread, for the gift of eternal life that Christ Jesus earned by his death and resurrection to be shared with people by the washing of baptism for infants and for adults, for the instruction, the proclamation of the word that happens on a nonstop basis in God's kingdom. God uses people, he uses men to be those proclaimers, to be those men who share the sacraments.
If you've ever considered becoming a pastor, contact Concordia Theological Seminary in Fort Wayne, Indiana. Their phone number, 1-800-481-2155, 1-800-481-2155, or visit ctsfw.edu.
Steadfast Lutherans, people who believe the law condemns everyone and should be preached to the fullest. People who believe the gospel is for everyone and should be preached to its sweetest. Traditional Lutheran doctrine and practice deliver every Sunday this law and gospel, that Christ was crucified for us sinners. To all who received him, who believed in his name, the Gospel of John says, he gave the right to become children of God. To see how Steadfast Lutherans preserves this good news for everyone, visit steadfastlutherans.org.
In my family, education means cultivating wisdom and virtue by teaching what is good, true, and beautiful. Memoria Press makes this type of education possible with their classical Christian curriculum. Characterized by simplicity, quality, and affordability, Memoria Press gives my children a rich classical education. Get $5 off your next order by using the coupon code LPR. For more information, go to memoriapress.com. Memoria Press, saving Western civilization one student at a time.
You can teach lay people theology. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Did you know that Luther Academy has been providing continuing education for confessional Lutheran pastors and lay people worldwide for more than 20 years? Luther Academy promotes confessional Lutheran theology through conferences, scholarly exchanges, and publications like Logia, the Confessional Lutheran Dogmatic Series, and Luther Digest. Find out more about Luther Academy and sign up for their free email newsletter at lutheracademy.com. lutheracademy.com.
Lutheran Talk.
In Lutheranism, I come as a guilty sinner in need of hearing the forgiving words of Christ every single time I gather. Every single time.
Lutheran Music. The new Lutheran Public Radio app. Download for iPhone, Android, Windows Phone, and Kindle at issuesetc.org.